Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
Right now, my first guest for this morning is the Irish comic who created and starred in the cult TV classic Black Books. He's the stand-up who won the prestigious Perrier Comedy Award in Edinburgh before he was even 25. And the actor who held his own alongside Simon Pegg in Shaun of the Dead before making his Shakespearean debut, directed by Ralph Fiennes this summer, no less. Now he's back on tour with a brand new show and joining us today to talk about it. Dylan Moran, good morning to you.
Hey there, Dermot. How are you?
I'm good. Actually, before we get into it, we were just chatting about the Gaeltacht and the things we might get up to and the first kisses and all that. Did you ever go to Irish college?
I did, yeah. I went to the Gaeltacht up in Donegal to Ranafast and did all of those things. It was great.
How's the Gaeltacht these days?
I don't even know how to say in Irish that it doesn't exist. That's how bad it is. But I guess there's a revival. There's a bit of a revival of that, which is, you know, probably a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you know, of course it's a good thing. The language is alive. It's an amazing language. And it's, you know, repays a bit of looking at it, actually. It's great because when you look at Irish, you do get into all the ways we can... I suppose what you get up to is you see why Irish people are... the way they are, where they come over the way they are, the way they sort of come at you with clusters of phrases, like clouds of phrases, rather than going directly, just like being on the nose about it, you know?
Yeah. Is that why you settled in Scotland, actually? Did you sort of naturally move towards a more Celtic approach to thinking and speaking?
Yeah, I think I did. I think I did without knowing it, because I was there the other day. I was back up the other day. And I spent 20 years there. It's a big, you know, it's the other half of the home, of, you know, that we all have for me. And, you know, where you're from and where you end up. That made massive sense to me because I don't know whether it's a Celtic or just between Scottish and Irish people. That's all I know. There's just an immediate... you're immediately on the same sort of ground. I don't know what it is. I suppose it's just maybe just you're simpatico because you're both biffed around by the bigger power historically, you know?
Yeah. What are your memories like of going there for the first time, seeing the craziness of that month of August when the Fringe is on and there's shows happening in every doorway? And if you look under a car, there's probably a comedy gig kicking off under there. What are your early memories of that whole festival where there were your really major name?
A massive excitement, really, more than anything else. Like you say, there were shows between the raindrops, you know, there's going on everywhere. So you're young and excited and in the scrum or the scuffle for attention and gigs up there. And everyone was at it, you know, everyone, when you're in that environment, you've got a lot of young people, every age actually, but a lot of youngsters like myself at the time. And, you know, everybody's a star. Everybody, when you're that age anyway, you're so naturally in your own head, you know, deep in your own stuff. You're not sort of jumping out of yourself and trying to imagine what it's like being other people that much yet. And we were all furiously engaged with the whole thing. It was really, really exciting. It's like a lot of atoms banging around in a collider. And it was brilliant. And, of course, there's all the fact you find out you can survive on a month. On just lager
and jellies.
Yeah. I couldn't do it now. I'd be dead in 2 days, but it was great.
Yeah. I remember my great excitement when I got to perform at the Cat Laughs in Kilkenny, which is our Edinburgh, I suppose. One of the reasons why I was so excited to be down there was because I was going to get to see you, because you were, I've always been one of my favourite comedians, and I always wondered... I was always a fan of surreal jokes, and I loved when people could go there because it's not an easy place to go into and bring people with you. And I always wondered, what were the kinds of things that you were watching when you were younger that led you down that sort of surreal path? Or was it just something that was in you?
I don't know, Jeremy. I was watching the same stuff everybody else was watching in Ireland. That's what was around. You know, I mean, I read a lot. I suppose the thing, we had a lot of books in the house, so I was reading lots of different things. I think that made a big difference to me more than... I mean, I loved a couple of comics. I loved Richard Pryor, you know, you're talking about when I was born in 1971, so, you know, He was massive then. Everybody knew him. It was stand-up was in its infancy as a form here. You know, Billy Connolly, Richard Pryor, that was really all people knew. And I liked Billy Connolly as well as a kid. I thought he was very funny. And, you know, people who could hold a stage and tell a story and you felt like you knew them. You know, that was the thing more than the, like you're saying, surreal. But I think that's kind of, you know, that's a fair, you know, the surrealism movement is not that actually that old. And all of that can, and its roots are in things much, much older. And Irish people have been doing that for a long, long time. Irish people have been surrealists for many, many hundreds of years.
Mm. Those early days in the Comedy Cellar in Dublin, when you, as you say, stand-up wasn't as, you know, ubiquitous as it is now. There were certain big names that seemed kind of untouchable. But places like the Comedy Cellar were starting to emerge upstairs in the International Bar in Dublin, like a little black hole. I always thought it looked like it had burnt down in a fire, but then was just never renovated. And people said, we should have comedy here. What are your memories of that starting off?
Well, my main memory of it, and it sounds sentimental, but my main memory of it was actually how kind the other young comics were. Because I think, as I, you know, you're obviously very nervous in that environment. You're exposing yourself, and you're trying something out for the first time in front of your peers. You know, and you're young, and it really matters. You want people to like you, and you want to get on with everybody. You know, and I was actually really just impressed by. It was run by, you know, all the comics that did it, Kevin, Barry Ardle and Dermot and Alex Lyons and loads of people, and they were just very kind, and that was the main impression I had. Everybody was very supportive of one another. The first 20 people in the around the stage were all comics looking at you anyway, so it was tiny. You know what I mean? We were inventing. I joined, just jumped on the ship, but those guys invented the scene. It wasn't there before. But there was no platform for young people to kind of get this stuff out of them and make each other laugh.
Mm.
And then there was, because of those guys.
Talk to us about Dalla Ho, because you've been using the phrase Dalla Ho gotta go. What does it all mean?
Well, Dalla Ho is an Americanism. I mean, it's you know, you'll hear it in rap songs or something, but I guess. But to me, the phrase made me smile or laugh, just because it's so abbreviated. It's just that everyone wants everything to be quicker. It says a lot with two little words. But I think the reason the phrase stuck in my head was just because I kind of was looking around at how we're all living.
Mm.
And the way with everyone on their machines and and everyone's quite, you know, the news is absolutely, obviously, you know, we're reaching new levels of awful every day, pioneering new forms of misery.
Do you despair? Do you despair for humanity?
No, I don't despair, because you can't do anything with despair. It doesn't do anything. It just kind of falls over and lies there. So you can't do anything with it. But I just think people are living incredibly small lives, and they don't have to. It's a complete con. We've conned ourselves. I'm not even blaming the tech companies or governments or anybody. I'm blaming us. I think we've done the most extraordinary switcheroo on ourselves and swapped out a really, really roomy way of looking at the universe and everything for an incredibly constrained, frightened, small, petty viewpoint.
Yeah,
that's
well,
my position.
Yeah, there's no doubt, though, that the tech that we brought into our world is amplifying everything. How do you feel about that?
Well, how do you feel about everything being amplified all of the time? I mean, what are you going to feel about it? You're going to feel like your ears are sore. That's all you can feel.
Mm.
And then you're going to feel that your inner ears are sore. And then your inner ears are sore. And so it goes until you're drowned. Like, you know, T.S. Eliot said, till human voices wake us and we drown. That's it. You don't get to hear yourself anymore. And then you don't want to spend time with yourself anymore, because when you do, you go, hang on, this thing isn't noisy. This is no good. You know, you get alienated from yourself because you buy into the bullshit.
Do you think then that comedy is, I guess it's more important now than ever? I know we tend to say that at various times in history.
It's the real deal. It is. Mm. It's really important if it's the real thing. It's not important if it's just someone trying to get a hysterical laugh because everyone feeling a bit panicky and scared and they want to get through the night. That's really boring. That's the laughter of denial. You know, you want a room where people are shaking because you've actually hit it, because you've described what life feels like right now.
Mm. And I guess
that's what you want.
Yeah, and the beauty of comedy is that it opens people's minds, shakes them out of those mindsets that we're constantly reinforcing, as we say.
It's a physical thing, you know. It's not high art. With high art, you sit and you contemplate and you absorb and you receive and you let all the things swoosh around inside your delicate inner bits. But with comedy, you actually, it's a physical business. You're making a hop. You're pushing out air from your diaphragm because someone has made you feel something and release. You know, it is a kind of a no hands massage.
Yeah. Speaking of art, actually, I want to talk to you about that because I'm a big fan of your art. If anyone goes to dylanmoran.com, you can have a look and see the kinds of drawings and artworks that you've had on display. In fact, you did do that. You had an exhibition this year. How did it go?
Yeah, I had a couple. It was good. It was very good. I sold quite a bit of stuff, and I was delighted people liked it and they responded to it. People were laughing as they were walking around the gallery, and yeah, it was good. It was great for me because I've done it all my life. So I thought, well, what the hell, you know, I'll have to give it a go. I draw every day. I have done since I was tiny, forever. So I kind of use the drawings as a way of writing, to be honest with you, because I don't know what I want, you know, I don't know what I want to write about or get into. And then I started with images, you know.
That's really interesting because it's almost like before the filters attach themselves to what it is you're going to end up saying or trying to communicate, it's almost as if the art is the unfiltered stuff that comes through first, and then you put layers on top of that. So it could be writing your stand-up or writing TV. Is that how it could work?
Yeah, there's definitely some truth in that. It's, you know, some people say images, but the Jungians say that images lie underneath words. You know, images come first. I mean, you don't think in words; you think in pictures. So, you know, you don't have the word the and in your head. You just, you know, you see an apple and it's on a table. So you don't. That's how we work. So images are pretty important.
Yeah. I mean, if you think the way, if you've been doing it since you were a kid, that's the way we operate when we're kids. We don't sort of stand back and go, you know, write a to-do list. Today I'll be drawing a rabbit, a dinosaur.
Oh, no, course,
you just let it flow.
And that's the other thing about drawing or painting is the physical act. That's one of the reasons why I like it. I had a lot of back trouble in the last couple of years because I'm middle-aged and, you know, everybody has trouble, arse trouble, back trouble, whatever it is. I have all of it. And if you're writing, you're parked in a chair and you're moving your hand from right to left across, you know, 6 inches or 8 inches, it's not exercise. Whereas if you're painting and drawing, you can jump up and rip something up and kick something away and go, I hate that, and then do a big slash there and a big blob there. You know what I mean? It's much more like a physical act.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny you're talking about ailments as you get older. I was watching our brilliant athlete, Kate O'Connor, throw the javelin over the weekend. Part of me was getting sympathy pains in my right shoulder. I was going, if I threw that thing, I would make bits of my rotator cuff. I never used to think like that.
I feel sympathetic pain watching anybody move around, doing anything. But yeah, for sure.
You had your Shakespearean debut. You played Touchstone in As You Like It, which I think was a bit of a copycat act by you. Not sure if you're aware. I played Touchstone in 1989 in the Bell Table in Limerick. Obviously, you were heavily inspired by that. That's why you've been working with Ray Fiennes on your own production of it.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a lot of work then. It is a lot of work. It was a ton of work. It was more like real work than I've ever done in my life. Mm. In that kind of, you know, laboring way, because you turn up early, you work hard all day, focused on one thing, and then.
I feel you may have put more work in than my transition year performance, but.
Well, it wasn't by choice. It was just the race worked everybody pretty hard. You know, that's it. I think there was a kind of a. I began to think at one point there must be some military strategy in this, like breaking us down so we all conform or something, because it was pretty relentless. All the other actors were saying they'd never worked as hard on the show either, because it was like crazy amounts of rehearsal, you know. And then the show was only on for 3 weeks, but they're hoping to get it to London next year, so I'm hoping that'll happen.
What was your experience like with, you know, bringing your comedy through a Shakespearean filter? Did you enjoy it?
I did, but I wasn't thinking about me much. I was thinking about not screwing it up for everybody else. I was very, very keen not to make a dick of myself, because I had colleagues on stage. Usually it's just me. If I mess up, nobody knows, because I'll be there covering it with something else, and I mess up all the time. In fact, you could say that the show is an unbroken series of mess-ups that nobody knows about. but with Shakespeare, obviously, you know, you have to be on point, as it were. and I made loads of mistakes. But that then I realized that, and anyway, that was kind of part of it. It's you know, because the role is comic, and it's as long as I could make mistakes and then reincorporate it or whatever. And I'm not saying I made tons of mistakes all the time, but I did. There were speeches where I would forget a word or two or something, or I would swap a line order. And sometimes I mentioned that on stage, which I was invited to do. It wasn't me doing it. You know what I mean? Mm. I was encouraged, but I was quite reluctant of that because I wanted to make sure that everyone could hear me and, you know, that I wasn't messing it up and that I was being good with the other actors. You know, I was totally a newbie, so I had to get over that, and I did, and it was great.
Yeah, yeah. Well, God, I really would love to see it if it came to Ireland. We'd absolutely love that. Before you go, I just want to say, I really loved your short format sitcom series for BBC Two, which you did called Stuck, with Morgana Robinson.
They didn't like it enough to recommission it.
Sorry?
They didn't like it enough to recommission it, or we didn't hit the numbers or whatever. Some critics really liked it, but I don't know, we didn't play out to a massive audience, so that was that.
Oh, because I absolutely loved it, because I just love seeing your words in other characters' mouths. And you just think, for me, I get more bang for my buck. I get more Dylan because there's all these characters in your world, in your head. And I think Stuck did that for me. I just thought it was awesome.
Well, thanks very much, Dermot. I liked it too. And I like having other actors around because I like not looking at me.
Well, thankfully, we like looking at you. Dylan's live show, Dalaho, starts on 25th of September in Theatre Royal Waterford, finishes in Vicar Street, Dublin on Saturday, 15th of November. So get out there, get your tickets now while you can. DylanMoran.com for dates and tickets. You'll also see him at the Galway Comedy Festival Tuesday, 21st, Monday to 27th of October. GalwayComedyFestival.ie for details and tickets. Dylan Moran, thanks so much for chatting to us this morning.
Thanks, Dermot. Mind yourself.
You